Fans, nice to have you back with us. Giants-Dodgers coming up. We're joined by one of the familiar voices. When you hear his voice, you know exactly who it is. He is an icon of broadcasting, sports broadcasting in the Bay Area for over 40 years. And this past week has announced his retirement, and that is Steve Bitker. 10 years KNBR, 30 years KCBS, but a Bay Area sports guy all the way. Steve, nice to have you with us today.
Marty, thanks. That's right. Born in San Francisco, believe it or not.
Well, it's wonderful. I believe it, the passion you've had for San Francisco sports. But as I say, people just have to hear your voice. And they know it's you and Hal Ramey on KCBS for so many years. But, Steve, what led to this retirement this week?
Well, Marty, I'm getting up there in years. Don't want to be one of those folks who works so long that the performance starts to deteriorate. I mean, that can happen whether you're a ball player or a broadcaster or especially in any sort of public line of work. So I was actually thinking about retiring a year ago. In fact, I was pretty set on it. Turned 65 a couple of years ago, and then the pandemic hits, and I basically put everything off for a year because we had family trips planned to my wife and I to Asia and to Europe in 2020. And of course, that all got washed away. And so I just decided to put it off a year and made the decision about 3 months ago to retire in May, picked a date, stuck to it, and have had no regrets, no second thoughts whatsoever.
Well, just so people know, of course, they recognize the voice. Your job at KCBS, you and Hal were together for so many years. Well, what did you do there?
Well, I was hired to be the morning sports anchor in 1991. My first day on the air was April Fool's Day. I had spent the previous 7 years at KNBR, the first five as a news reporter, covering City Hall in San Francisco and the Hall of Justice. And then had the opportunity to move into morning drive sports. And I guess I'd always wanted to do something like that. So the last 2 years at KNBR, I did morning drive sports. And then Mike Woodley, who carved a niche for himself here in San Francisco at KCBS, got an offer to go back to his hometown of Minneapolis to work at the big station WCCO there. And, you know, I had a break in my contract. KNBR let it expire. A little bit careless there, otherwise I couldn't have talked to KCBS, and the rest is history, and I went to KCBS, and I've been there for the last 30 years.
Well, you and Catfish Hunter and Carlton Fisk, they
It's amazing how quickly 30 years comes, you know? It's
really? Well, so people that understand Catfish Hunter, Charlie Finley didn't make an insurance premium payment for him, and Catfish became a free agent, and Carlton Fisk got his contract 2 or 3 days late, and the Boston Red Sox lost the Hall of Famer, two Hall of Famers, and Steve Bitker, a Hall of Famer as well. Steve?
Yeah, you know, you get careless, and you can lose people, and that's what happened,
really?
whether it's on the field or in the broadcasting booth.
Well, Larry Bear once said to me, "Are you a free agent?" And I said, "I absolutely am." And next thing I knew, I was on KNBR at that point. But
right.
Who did you work with in the early days at KNBR?
In terms of news or sports?
Sports or anybody in general. Some of those
sports,
names that we love to hear.
Well, I mean, sports, you know, Ralph Barbieri was doing afternoon drive sports then. And so I worked with Ralph. I worked with Dave Newhouse, who had a sports talk show in the evening. And then I worked with a whole bunch of icons in terms of Bay Area disc jockeys like Carter B. Smith and C.J. Bronson and Ron Lyons, and then worked with a bunch of news icons as well. And, of course, Marty, you may not know this, but the first 2 years of my broadcasting career right out of Cal – in 1966 and 76 and 77, I worked at KSFO when it was billed as the world's greatest radio station. And in the minds of those of us who worked there, it really, really was. And talk about icons, Gene Nelson and Jim Lang and Al Jazbo Collins and Russ Syracuse. And, you know, I just consider myself so fortunate to have worked with folks like this.
Well, so many years in the Bay Area. You know the voice, it's Steve Bitker, and we're glad to have him on on the show with us today. Steve, as you look over the landscape, well, and you've written a book about the Giants, the original San Francisco Giants, the Giants of 1958. It's a terrific book. But as you look over the landscape of Giants baseball, and of course, you're a native San Franciscan. You go back to the Stoneham days of Horace Stoneham being an owner. What about that landscape of Giants baseball when you look back on it?
Well, the one consistent thing has been, for the most part, the uniforms amongst the classiest in baseball, and the fact that they've had a grip on baseball fans, not just in San Francisco, but all over the Bay Area. And it's always been that way since they moved here in 1958. And, you know, I was lucky enough that my folks enjoyed baseball and liked to go to games. And so my older brother and I got to go to numerous games at Seal Stadium in 58 and 59. And one of the great things about Seal Stadium was that at the end of the game, you could walk down to the field and cross the field out to the parking lot. There was an opening in the center field scoreboard. And as long as you didn't go on the infield dirt or the pitcher's mound, and they have those, you know, surrounded by security, you got to walk across your field of dreams after every game. And I thought Seal Stadium was the only park in the majors that did that. I thought that for many, many years. And then I remembered seeing Ken Burns' piece on baseball, and Bob Costas talked about doing the same thing when he was a kid at Yankee Stadium. So there were probably other diamonds that did the same. But, you know, fabulous memories for me going to, you know, I went to games 1 and 7 of the 1962 World Series.
Wow.
The Giants and the Yankees. My dad got a couple of tickets for each game, and so I went with my mom for game 1, my dad and my brother game 2, and then my folks went to game 6. Billy Pierce pitched the Giants into a game 7, and then they let my brother and me, ages, 11 and 9, go to game 7 with some neighbors that also had tickets. And, you know, something like that. I mean, as painful as that was to watch as a kid, I've always treasured the memory of actually being at one of the most famous, iconic games in Giants history.
Well, great story. What was it like? First of all, I did go on the field at Ebbets Field. We did that in Brooklyn. After the
great
game. I remember running on the field and thinking I was Jackie Robinson or Duke Snyder or Pee Wee Reese. And it's a thrill that I still feel today. But
yeah.
Thinking back to those teams of the 60s, and now you're growing up and you're a teenager, of Mays, McCovey, and Cepeda, of course, gets traded, but Marichal and Perry. And they just couldn't overcome the Dodgers or whoever would win the National League pennant, but a great era of National League baseball.
Yeah, Jim Ray Hart, too. Can't forget him. But, yeah, absolutely. I remember we went to see Bill Cosby perform at the Circle Star Theater, and at the beginning of his act, he talked about always being a Giants fan, and he started naming all the names, the great names, the ones that you just listed, and then he paused it, and then he said, but we couldn't win. And the crowd sort of reacted with acknowledgement like, yeah, we understand. And it was almost, not always, but it was almost always the Dodgers. The Dodgers just seemed to have the better pitching. The Giants had the big bombers, but the Dodgers had the guys with great speed, led off by Maury Wills, of course. And they had the better pitching, the better starting pitching. You know, the Giants always had Marichal for so many years, but it was hard to put together another great pitcher with him. Perry had some, you know, some nice seasons, but he really became a Hall of Famer after he left San Francisco. And so the Giants almost always, except in 62, just fell a little bit short, a game or two or three here. It was really frustrating growing up as a Giants fan in those days. And you know, I developed a nice hatred for the Dodgers, which as I got older, I matured and got over it.
Steve Bitker with us in retirement of 40 years in the broadcasting business here in the Bay Area, sports broadcasting for, if I added up, about 37 of those years, something like that. Steve, when you think back to some of the great sports moments you've covered in the Bay Area, what comes to mind for you?
Well, I think if we're talking baseball, One game would be the Brian Johnson, I think, three-run homer in extra innings to beat the Dodgers that helped vaulted the Giants into the postseason in 1997 when they were battling with the Dodgers. That was really one of the great, great moments, without question. I think covering the 1989 World Series, you know, back in those days, stations like KNBR and KCBS, you know, would send news people and sports people to postseason games in any sport involving the local teams. And, you know, that was great being in Wrigley Field for games one and two of the National League Championship Series. Mm. And there was that unforgettable moment when Don Zimmer went to the mound and had Greg Maddux walk Brett Butler to load the bases to bring up Robbie Thompson. Now, that made sense, except when you remember that Will Clark was coming up after Robbie Thompson. So Robbie Thompson struck out and Will Clark hit a grand slam home run on the Waveland Avenue, and the rest is history. But, you know, great memories of covering those games. I remember sitting next to Joe Fonzie, and we both looked at each other and we said, "Do you believe what Don Zimmer is setting himself up for?" And sure enough, he had to pay dearly. And then, of course, you know, the Will Clark single that won it in game five and sent them into the World Series, covering the World Series. I mean, who could forget that? The games one and two, and the A's won, I think, 5-0 and 5-1 in Oakland in the first two games. And then we get the earthquake. I was in the broadcasting booth for KNBR. It just queued up an interview with Matt Williams. And then a minute or two later, the quake hits. And, you know, I remember Lee Jones being really shaken in the broadcasting booth. And I remember walking out of the booth at some point, and the first person I saw was Jack Buck. Jack Buck coming out of I guess he was announcing for CBS or for one of the networks. And he looks at me and he says, "It's nothing to worry about. It's nothing to worry about." Well, in fact, it was. You know, and then, you know, KNBR is going into extensive news coverage. And so I'm down on the field getting interviews with players and with officials and then hustling back up to the booth. And Bob Lazich anchored the coverage. And by the time I got out of the stadium, you know, it was dark. And I went to the hospitality tent and ran into Mike Woodley. Now, Mike Woodley was really shaken up because he was up in the football press box when the earthquake hit. So as much as we may have been rattled in the regular broadcasting press box for baseball, everyone I have talked to over the years who was up in the football press box described it as absolutely terrifying. Mm. And so Mike and I just hung out. You know, we had a couple of drinks, and I think we waited until we just felt until he felt he could get to San Francisco driving his car. And then I was hopeful of getting across the San Mateo Bridge to get to Alameda. Fortunately, I had been able to make contact by phone with my wife shortly after the quake hit. I was really lucky. And so I knew that she and our older daughter were fine. Our younger daughter hadn't been born yet. And so finally I left Candlestick very late in the evening, drove down 101, and the traffic trying to get on the San Mateo Bridge was it was absolute gridlock. So I ended up getting off in Redwood City, driving up into the hills, knocked on the door of one of my best friends from high school and his wife, whom I knew from living 3 years in Tokyo. And fortunately, they were awake. They opened the door, looked at me, and one of them said, "I had a feeling we might see you here tonight." And they had the guest room all ready for me. And so that was great. And then the next morning, I'm up driving to San Francisco to get there before 6 a.m. And the thing I remember is that, you know, all the power was out in the city. And so the only thing you could see was what you could see from your headlights in your car. But if you look to your left or to your right, it was just dark. And it was a struggle just to find the KNBR, the radio station, on Montgomery Street out by the Embarcadero. But I managed to do it. So, I mean, that was unforgettable. The 2002 World Series was unforgettable. It didn't work out the way Giants fans wanted it to, but being down in Anaheim for the unforgettable Game 6 and 7 was still, you know, something I'm glad I was there to see. And then the great run, you know, the Ishikawa home run that won the pennant, and games in 10, 12, and 14 of the World Series. You know, unfortunately, starting in 10, 12, and 14, you know, stations, networks were cutting back on expenses. And, you know, we didn't get, Hal and I didn't get sent to cover those road games in the playoffs or the World Series. And that was a sign of things to come. I always loved covering spring training every year. I, you know, just treasured it 15, 20 years. And then that ended. I haven't been to spring training in over 10 years now. So, but those are fabulous memories. There's no question.
Well, the beauty of it is that you saw Seal Stadium. You were there for Candlestick and for the beautiful ballpark at Third and King now. Thinking yeah. back to the change from Ken. Now, you're out there for the Candlestick Knights, and you know that. And then, of course, you get the beautiful ballpark, as I say, AT&T or Pac Bell, whatever you want to call it. What about that feeling, the difference from Candlestick to the new ballpark?
Yeah, as you know, Marty, like night and day. And, you know, we, the Giants, the fans, had been so disappointed on multiple occasions with efforts to get a new ballpark built in San Francisco, or even there were attempts to get it built in San Jose, and you just couldn't get the measures to pass. And it was extremely frustrating. And I think, you know, sort of getting back to, if not games, events that I covered, probably about a year after I started at KCBS, you know, the Bob Lurie made the announcement that he had sold the Giants to a group in Tampa Bay, Florida, and they were going to move and become the Tampa Bay Giants. And for many months, you know, I was the KCBS investigative reporter on that story almost every day, chasing down leads. And it was incredibly exciting to be a part of. And of course, in the end, it worked out. I mean, the station sent me to cover baseball meetings in Chicago and St. Louis and ultimately in Phoenix, which was where when the National League owners voted to keep the Giants in San Francisco. I remember interviewing George W. Bush as the owner of the Texas Rangers, and he was one of the first owners who came out and said, I don't like the idea of the Giants moving. I don't like franchises moving in general, but it's important that we have a team on the West Coast in the National League, not just the Dodgers all by themselves, but the Giants as well. And he was a great interview, and I thought this guy should be commissioner of baseball someday. He'd be great. And I still think he would have been great. And at one point, I don't remember whether it was me or whether it was another reporter that was there. There may have been four or five of us with him at the same time. Asked him whether he had any desire to follow his father's footsteps and get into politics. And he didn't hesitate. He said, no way. I don't want all that scrutiny on my wife and me and our daughters. I just don't want that. And talk about the rest is history. But, you know, he was one of the first ones to come out in favor. And then you had the emergence of Walter Shorenstein and Peter McGowan and Bill White, who played an instrumental role, was an original Giant in 1956 in New York at 22 home runs. Thought he'd be their first baseman for many, many years. Uncle Sam called, spent 2 years in the Army. And when he returned in August of 1958, there was another first baseman, a rookie named Orlando Cepeda. And Bill White wound up having a marvelous career in St. Louis and Philadelphia, an amazing man with amazing stories to tell. So, you know, it was great to be able to have a wonderful stadium their first 2 years, a dreadful stadium from 1960 through 1999, and then to have, you know, a jewel of a ballpark afterwards. You know, it's hard to find the right words to describe, you know, what a stark difference. I think all of us who lived through those days at Candlestick will never lose our appreciation for the ballpark they play in now.
Well, it's great having you on, Steve Bitker. Just a pleasure. If you get tired or lonesome and you want to come in and do a segment on my show, you're more than welcome anytime. Believe me, you have great, great knowledge and great passion of baseball and sports, of course, in the Bay Area. So, Steve, what's on the agenda now?
Well, you know, we paid in full for my wife and I for a 15-day river cruise in Europe that has been postponed twice now. Now it's scheduled for mid-September, so we're hopeful, but if necessary, you know, it'll be postponed again. But we want to do more traveling, no question about it. My wife's 5 years younger than I am, and she's still working, so it's not like we're both retired. I'm going to pour wine one day at least, maybe 2 days a week at a winery in Livermore. I want to get back to playing golf. get back to riding my bike. I actually gave my bike to one of my sons-in-law a few years back, but I want to get back to it. So I want to get a new bike that's maybe more befitting someone my age than a 12-speed racing bike, which was what I had before. I want to do more cooking. I've always enjoyed cooking, but I'd like to branch out. There's a school in Berkeley. I don't know if it's reopened, but I know it shut down, you know, during the pandemic. But I wanted to go there and study French cooking, get started with that. I'd love to study Indian cooking. So, and then I've got some home projects that I've been putting off. And so I want to get to those. You know, go out and have lunches with friends and not have to worry about getting back home for an afternoon nap to prepare for getting up at 4 in the morning. Marty, the last 4 mornings I've slept over 8 hours and I've awakened to natural light in the bedroom. Do you know what that's like?
It's amazing.
For me?
What a career.
2 years of 4 a.m. No.
I know. What a career. Well, it's great to have you on. Our best to Alice and the girls. And you've had quite an impact on Bay Area sports. And as I say, it's great to have you on. Great to hear you. Loved hearing you and Hal together, Hal Ramey. And I'm just happy to have you on. So I wish you the best of luck, Steve. And I appreciate you being on.
Thanks, Marty. I'd love to do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As we go through this baseball season, he's a wealth of information. That's Steve Bitker heading off into retirement. All right. More coming up. KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.